back here on Beyond the Visor. I am your host, Bobby C., and the month of May is looming. We are less than 40 days away from the greatest spectacle in racing, May 26th, and the Indy 500 cannot come fast enough. We'll catch up with one of the top IndyCar insiders on this episode. We'll also touch base on what is coming up for a host of other racing series, including IndyCar. But first, we turn our attention to the racing capital of the world in our interview spotlight. Exciting times for the city of Indianapolis, and not just because Caitlin Clark is heading to the Indiana Fever, but also because the month of May is coming up and the IndyCar series in full swing. And we've got a very special guest here to talk about it, Caleb Hatch, the program director for Federated Media and the co-host for Caleb and Kenny in the Morning on 1380 The Fan, weekdays from 7 to 9 a.m. in Indy, as well as the co-host and producer for the new Track Record podcast on IndyCar Racing. Caleb, how's it going?
Going well.
Excited to have you here on the show and always excited to speak about IndyCar. Obviously crazy excited about the prospects of the Indianapolis 500. And there's some big names that'll be in the race as always. And one of them, of course, is Kyle Larson, who's made his way on the NASCAR circuit, but now going to, you know, take his swings at the Indy 500. I figured we could start there. I think there's a good chance that Kyle will be in the field of 33. We might have 34 and 35 entries this year. But what are you thinking about Kyle Larson after him being the second fastest at the Open Indy 500 test last week?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are pointing to, oh, second fastest. But, I mean, you look at how he pulled off that lap. You got a big draft, and so that obviously boosted the speeds. But I think from the work he's doing in the simulator, the fact that Arrow McLaren, I mean, they didn't have the results to show for it last year, really, but had some of the fastest cars last year at IMS, I think you have to feel pretty confident about his chances. And, you know, you look at the scheduling issues, right, the NASCAR All-Star race on qualifying weekend, so there could be some interesting logistical hurdles. But in terms of qualifying the race for the race, I feel like it's a lock. And what he can do, it's the same as any rookie, right? You have to be patient, take your time, and then be there with, you know, 20, 30 laps to go. And that is when you'd have your opportunity. But keeping it clean in the test is a good development. We'll see what he can do here coming up in just a couple weeks.
I think it's crazy, too, because the 2021 NASCAR Cup champion going to try to make his IndyCar Series debut in arguably the biggest motorsports event in the world and maybe one of the toughest ovals I think there is in all of motorsports.
Yeah, and I think the thing that makes it so much easier anymore is while he has limited testing time, they obviously have the sim that he can take part in, and then also just you get extended track time. So come qualifying weekend, he'll be ready. I think it is a lot. And in terms of race day, that's a different aspect. But in terms of qualifying for the race, I think it should be no problem for him.
Definitely. Vegas also interested in this race because they had pushed him up the rankings in terms of where they expect him to be. I think after Joseph Newgarden, he's kind of like a big pick now for the gamblers out there on the Indy 500.
Yeah, I saw that. That's fascinating because it tells me that Vegas doesn't actually follow and watch IndyCar.
1,000%. You know, and I think, too, you know, as someone obviously that's been a fan of the sport for a long time, not only now trying to make his debut, of course, at the Indy 500, but then he's going to try to attempt the double, right? Going to fly to the NASCAR mm-hmm. Cup Series for the Coca-Cola 600. I mean, that's 1,100 miles of racing in one day. And the previous gentlemen that have tried to do that, you know, really kind of mixed results. No one's really excelled that much at it, and maybe Tony Stewart. But what do you think the prospects of him not only doing well in the 500, but then turning around and going and doing well in the Coca-Cola 600?
I wish him luck, only because Tony Stewart, as you mentioned, he's the only driver to really have considerable success doing the double. So I wish Kyle Larson luck, but here's the thing. He's got the team behind him. He's putting in the work behind the scenes. It's just a matter of executing and qualifying and on race day.
Larson was the big news last week in IndyCar, and this week it's all about, I would say, two things. The first is the new Arrow Screen, or we should say Arrow Screen 2.0, which is debuting this weekend at Long Beach. I got a chance to see some of the videos online, and it, first of all, I think the IndyCar looks incredible. I've always said that. You know, I know Formula One cars, of course, are beautiful, but I think the Arrow Screen actually makes the IndyCar looked pretty cool. And I think it's going to, of course, be great for the drivers to be cooler in those cars. I wanted to get your thoughts on it, too.
Yeah, there are two things that really stick out to me on this. And there are different weight measurements, and it kind of gets tricky and confusing as opposed to what they're referencing here. But the number one thing is reduced weight, right? And so that's always good because it makes the cars faster and sleeker. So that's number one. But I think even more importantly is they're going to have vents for increased driver cooling, and that will start this weekend as any cars at Long Beach in Southern California this weekend. So, and the part that's really fascinating to me is the ducting is 3D printed in rubber. So it's just another safety feature that, you know, you're utilizing some interesting technology. But the increased vents at hot venues like IMS can be warm, can be cool, but can be warm. Obviously, Long Beach, the weather looks pretty nice this weekend. But when we get later on in the summer, right, in June, July, and August, this will be huge for the drivers. And just keeping them cooler in the cockpit is very, very good change for these drivers that I think is long overdue.
And Marshall Pruitt showing some of the videos, like I was saying this morning, I was watching on Twitter, and I just think it looks cool. Obviously, that concept, like you said, of it being 3D printed and being lighter, and I do like the fact that the changes have been made, of course, to not only help with safety, but I think to make the drivers a bit more comfortable. But it has been an adjustment for several drivers in this series in terms of them not really doing as well since the aero screen has come into play. I mean, I think of someone like Alexander Rossi, who, of course, has had tremendous success at Long Beach, but never really been the same driver since they've implemented the new aero screen.
Yeah, he's one you just kind of wonder if that benefits him moving forward, if that kind of comes back to the way the car used to be pre-aero screen, where he had the bulk of his success winning just one race since the aero screen came into frame. And you know, he's one maybe could benefit and being with the Aero McLaren team, certainly going to have the resources behind him to make a jump.
Any thoughts on this race coming up here on this weekend with Long Beach? I mean, Rossi, of course, again, has been successful here before. But I think if you had to speak about the drivers that are doing, we'll say, well right now, it certainly would not be Alexander Rossi. I think the names that come to the top of the forefront would be drivers like Joseph Newgarden or Alex Palou, who have really been the stars of the series of late.
Yeah, and the team I'm interested in again this weekend, they've had a lot of success and speed on street circuits, and dominated this weekend last year with Kyle Kirkwood, is Andretti Global, and what they do. Can Kirkwood repeat? Colton Hurt has obviously won at Long Beach. Can Marcus Ericsson get a win at Long Beach? They're kind of the team I'm going to watch just because of their past success there and also just how good that street course program has been. The speed's there. It's just a matter of putting together the full race pace, and we'll see what they can do this weekend.
Andretti Global, of course, making some news as well with their new hub overseas, again, still making a push to try to be in Formula One, which I think is a good segue here because we've got a driver that's coming into the IndyCar series from Formula Two in Teo Pourchaire. Availability actually today. I was on that from the IndyCar series with the driver, and of course, he'll be filling in for the injured David Malukas at Arrow McLaren. And what do you think of Teo, and what kind of prospects could you see him jumping right into a series I think is tough to make an adjustment at, and of course not F2?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for him, it just comes down to the type of circuit. Street circuits, that's not the kind of circuit you want to jump into just because there's no runoff space that, you know, he's used to a lot more runoff space, obviously, running an F2. And a very talented driver, but it's a big challenge. And that will kind of be the key thing I'm watching. If he can keep it clean throughout the weekend, that's the biggest thing. It's not about getting a finishing result, but just running all the laps, staying off the walls, getting good data, good feedback. And there's a chance, we'll see, there's a chance, depending on David Malukas and how that wrist injury continues to heal, but we could see Pourchaire again next weekend when IndyCar goes to Alabama and Barber Motorsports Park.
Yeah, he kind of alluded to that there was a good possibility that he's, you know, on tap for the next race as well. And, you know, troubling, obviously, for David Malukas and, you know, hoping to see him back because I think he's a very promising driver.
Yeah, you hope he's at least ready in time for the month of May with the NDGP and obviously the Indianapolis 500. You just hope he heals quickly because the more this goes on, the more concerned, I guess, you get in terms of the healing of the injury, and then what's his future there.
and plenty of F2 drivers that have made the jump to the IndyCar series, you know, guys like Christian Lundgaard, but none of them of late have been F2 champions. And there's certainly a lot of talk on social media and online about Tao being maybe one of the next potentially great F1 drivers, but he was adamant today on the availability that he's excited about the opportunity with the IndyCar series. Of course, a big fan of the Indy 500, so he would love to race in that at some point. And I think he's a guy that, in terms of upcoming racers, that I could certainly see doing very well right out of the gate in the IndyCar series. Again, even though I know how difficult it is to make that jump, because it's just a tough series.
Yeah, and I think for him, just getting any seat time is positive because, I mean, he's just kind of stuck in a logjam with a handful of drivers who should be racing in F1. They just haven't gotten their opportunity yet. So we'll see how this weekend goes. And, you know, I wish him best of luck because it's a big challenge ahead at Long Beach.
Yeah, I'm considering whether or not I should try to, you know, take him in our IndyCar series fantasy league. And a shout out to the New Track Record podcast. I think about you guys all the time because I got a pretty cool Tom Carnegie bobblehead on my desk. And I definitely like to push that button and play some of the old clips of Tom Carnegie announcing at the Indy 500.
Oh, it's classic stuff. I remember it as a kid quite well.
And New Track Record podcast, I wanted to speak a little bit about what you guys are doing in Indy, both at 1380 The Fan and the show, and then, of course, the podcast, too. I mean, speak about your partner and what it's been like to put together such great content.
Yeah, the podcast's been going on for nearly 6 years, so it's been a good run and just two fans chatting and found a way to kind of develop into a good platform and interact with the IndyCar fan community. It's been very enjoyable to take part in that for the last handful of years and really kind of get a pulse for not only what the fans think, but, you know, what insiders are hearing and saying and kind of sharing our opinions on the sport.
Yeah, I think it's so cool the engagement that you guys have and, you know, make jokes about the fantasy league, but that was so cool to be part of that the last couple of years. And did well my first year until, you know, started talking some smack online, and then I wasn't able to win it at the end. Last year I was terrible in the fantasy league, just a bad year for me with some of my picks, and so far off to a good start with just the one race. And I think from an IndyCar fan perspective, it's just incredible to think that the season, we're kind of into it for a bit now, but we've only had two races and only one points race, and that started with Joseph Newgarden winning at St. Pete, and he leads, of course. That was all the way back on March 10th, and then, you know, to have the thermal race, which I think is a nice new wrinkle to the IndyCar series, but that was March 24th. It's been slowly developing, but of course the month of May is coming up soon.
Yeah, it's really weird, right? Because, I mean, we've had two races, one that matters in terms of points, and we're, you know, nearing the end of April, and then now we're going to have, you know, 5-6 races here in the span of basically, what, a month and a half, 2 months. So the schedule gets really busy, and starting this weekend, this is really a key stretch for all these teams, and, you know, having races back-to-back before you even start the month of May is big. And I think once we get to the Indy 500, we'll at least have a feel for what the championship looks like, just because right now, one race, it's hard to make a lot of snap judgments. Beyond Joseph Newgarden being up top is not a big surprise.
Were you surprised that Newgarden jumped right out of the gate? I mean, obviously winning the 500 last year, and I think he has emerged as the face of the IndyCar series. Either him or Alex Palou, those are the top two drivers right now.
Yeah, I think it's not a surprise. I mean, I picked Newgarden to win the title going into the season. It's not really a surprise just because he hasn't won a championship since 2019, which is kind of hard to believe because he's come so close, several second place finishes over the years. And I just feels like it's his year, and one race down in terms of points, it is his year, but there's so much to play out, obviously, over the next handful of months.
And the thermal race, I mean, again, you know, it's an exhibition, but definitely cool for Alex Palou to win the big money. What did you think of that as a new addition to the schedule?
You know, I know it was controversial among the fans, but I found it to be enjoyable, and just IndyCar tried something different, right? And that's the biggest takeaway that I had from that event. Certainly tweaks that need to be made if it does return in 2025, but they tried something new, and they were able to test out some new ideas and some new ways of doing things. And, you know, in terms of a financial standpoint, if Thurman wants to pay for it again, I'm sure IndyCar will show up, and hopefully the purse maybe gets a little bigger. but I think it was a good change of pace from a typical race weekend. I know probably not all the fans or the drivers would agree with me on that, but it was new. It was different. A few tweaks could go a long way, and I think that's kind of where I stand on that event.
And props to IndyCar for all of the new things that they are attempting to do. I mean, in terms of their marketing, I would say a really incredible push on so many different levels to try to get fans engaged. I'm sure a lot of it more focused on Indianapolis and the Midwest, but I think of even things like these new Parkside IndyCar cards, which, again, for someone that grew up collecting baseball cards, I was pretty excited to see that, and I got myself a box. I know you bought some packs. I was curious what signatures you pulled from the Parkside IndyCar cards.
Well, one pack I sent to my nephew for his birthday, so I'm not sure if what he got from that. I don't know if he got any signatures. The other pack I've been holding back, so we'll see. I'll probably invest in a box here over the next several weeks or so. But yeah, I mean, I think it's blown away expectations for what people have, and I've seen a lot of cool stuff on social media, not just signatures, but people getting one of one cards. And it's been a big boost to the sport, and it's just something for the fans to connect around and to have something. I mean, trading cards has been really popular since 2020, since the pandemic, of people, finding their old trading cards. I found mine, picked them up from my parents' house and went through them. So it's just kind of one of those things that it's a good nostalgia thing. It's also a great way to introduce young fans and get them kind of connected to drivers in the sport as well.
My best card so far in terms of the autographs is I got a Will Power, so excited about that.
Not bad.
An Indy 500 winner. But now I'm addicted. I think I'm going to buy more packs or more boxes, especially when I get to Indy for the month of May. But I thought it was cool, this idea of concepts like having a fan fest, and I'm hoping that the IndyCar series decides to push some of that into other cities and other states and maybe push the line just outside of that, Midwest market.
Yes, and having a national distribution, I mean, it's a big boost, and we'll see, how those sell. For example, this weekend at Long Beach, I think that will kind of be a big way to kind of track where things are at least for IndyCar internally, on the popularity of the Parkside cards.
I'm going to put you kind of like in the driver's seat, so to speak. If you were in charge of the IndyCar series or IMS, what might be some of the things that you would want to implement or do to see the series change? Because I know for our loyalists, and again, I'm one of the few here in the Northeast that I think, promotes IndyCar the way that I do, probably don't necessarily know about some of the history or recent history about the split and the ramifications for, I would say, decades now that IndyCar has been slowly trying to build it back up to what it was, right? The centennial era, 2016, 100th running, and I would say the last, this has really been a glory period of resurgence for the IndyCar series.
Yeah, really since 2016, it feels like things have incrementally gone up, and that's the thing, though. It's been inching forward. You're not getting big chunks at a time, but they're making progress. And the last several years, in terms of attendance and health of the sport, I mean, it's never been better, especially with, the crowds they're getting at the Indy 500. I think the biggest thing to me is just, get rid of doubleheaders and get, 17, 18, up to 20 true events, get a race back in the Northeast. That's a big gap on the schedule, whether it's Pocono or Watkins Glen or somewhere like that. Just find a way to get a race back in the Northeast, get a second race in Canada, because there are a lot of Canadian fans for the sport, and then just continuing to find a way to increase the technology and those partnerships. I think we have a chassis that's too old at the moment in terms of competitiveness, and you introduce a new car that does introduce new interest to the sport, so that's a way to kind of attract some interest. The teams would complain about it, but costs are costs. They'll still likely participate. And I think just finding a way to get more solid entries as opposed to having where we're potentially pushing 29, 30 entries next year, finding a way to getting 24, 25 really solid, well-funded entries for the future. And, with the charter system talk, as long as it doesn't impact any 500 qualifying, I guess I don't really care. If that's what they want to do, go for it, as long as there's no impact there.
Yeah, crazy to me to only have one race on the East Coast, of course, with the opener and St. Pete. And as someone that lives here in New York, in New York City, I would love to see something closer to home. Definitely used to go to that Pocono race or Watkins Glen every year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've suggested in the past, you and I have spoken about this off the air, but, you know, the idea of having a city race, right? Like, whether it doesn't have to be through the streets of New York down the West Side Highway, but maybe, you know, follow up like what NASCAR has done in Chicago and try to find, you know, some place like that where they could do another race like they did in Nashville, which I think was, of course, great.
Yeah, a buzz-worthy event, I think, is the next step. And Thermal was them trying something new, like an all-star version of an event. But moving forward, and they claim to have this, you know, big kind of groundbreaking event, but it's got to be on NASCAR in Chicago level or F1 in Vegas level, right? That's kind of the expectation that fans have. And that's what people need, and I think that's kind of the next big thing that IndyCar can try to do, because you have to keep giving people something new. And, you know, they've tweaked the aero screen. The hybrids are coming later this season. Those are nice things, but you got to make a truly dynamic decision and a dynamic event, or have a dynamic driver come in, and that doesn't seem to be in the pipeline right now. But to really kind of capture the attention of people beyond, you know, motorsports fans. And NASCAR able to do that with Chicago, obviously F1 in Vegas, and now it's just IndyCar's turn to see what they can do and find a way to really grow things.
Yeah, I mean, I think the push too, right, like in terms of the docuseries, 100 Days, mm-hmm. I think that went great last year. And, of course, now it's streaming and coming back again for a second season. And then just, you know, I'd love to see even other stories, right? Like you and I spoke about the Lionheart, Dan Weldon's new doc about the late Dan Weldon, and to see all of those different projects that kind of talk about IndyCar, whether good or bad, I think brings a lot of attention to the series.
Yeah, they're doing those little things, right? I mean, 100 Days of Indy Season 1 now on Netflix. That's big. Season 2 coming soon. The Lionheart doc. I don't know if you saw the Jerry Seinfeld Pop-Tart movie Unfrosted is going to be, Long Beach is going to be featured this weekend. There will be clips in the movie. So, like, those are the things within the media industry of, you know, hey, that kind of captures people's attention, but they're still waiting for that big break. They've done a lot of good legwork and groundwork on just getting IndyCar in front of different areas in media, but now it's just IndyCar needs to put together something themselves that really is kind of a tipping point.
I know we're always big here in New York about being like, you know, the Mecca, but I think in terms of sports towns, man, Indy is where it's at. I mean, in terms of the big events that you guys put on, or like I said, even now, attention with Caitlin Clark, I think of the recent, of course, NBA All-Star events, and IndyCar doing a good job of certainly piggybacking with a lot of those things and getting the drivers out at Pacers games and even drawing some attention with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, and we'll see, you know, what role, because she'll have a role. She has a personal endorsement deal with Gainbridge, but what role does Caitlin Clark have in the month of May? Probably not going to be driving the pace car or waving a green flag just due to her WNBA travel schedule, and they're on the road the night before the 500, but could she be a part of the IndyGP? Like, there will be some sort of role for her, you would think, and that's obviously a big visibility thing, and you know, yeah, things are rolling. I mean, you have Caitlin Clark with the fever. You obviously have the Colts coming off a surprising effort. The Pacers making the playoffs for the first time in several years. And obviously the month of May, the biggest sporting event in the world coming up here in just over a month.
Andrew Luck even recently on socials talking about how the month of May is just like this incredible thing that you got to see it, to, you know, to really understand it.
Yeah, Andrew Luck was at the Chuck Pagano's gala the other weekend, and you know, he said the thing he misses the most was the month of May in terms of his time in Indianapolis, which says a lot. And he participated in different Indy 500 related events and clearly had a connection with all that, because it's just such a unique thing. And for people who are able to get access, which in IndyCar you can get access, it's not like F1 or NASCAR where it's nearly impossible. You get people a taste of that, and then they start to get it and understand that that's really the biggest thing, right? Is just getting people to a race or getting people to the pits or the garage area or what have you to really check things out and see it firsthand for themselves.
Caleb, before we let you go, where can everybody find the show you know, I guess your not only personal handle, but the show handles on socials.
Yeah. IndyCar Podcast is the show handle. My handle is pretty simple, Caleb Hatch, just my name. You can find us on pretty much any podcasting platform.
Awesome, my man. Thank you so much for coming on, and send my best to Kenny.
All righty, will do.
I'll see you at the Indy 500.
Sounds good.
Great stuff there with Caleb, and now we will turn our attention to the latest Indy in 60.
He makes a move. Little Al wins by just a few tenths of a second. Perhaps the closest finish in the history of the Indianapolis 500.
It sounds like there's some tears in your voice right now.
Well, you just don't know what Indy means.
Little Al in 1992, just one of the most memorable in 107 runnings. The voice of the 500 once said, "These men have the rare combination of sacrifice, hope, triumph, and despair. The climax of their ambition is this pilgrimage to the object of their dreams, Indianapolis." "Yes," said Collins, "the thrill of the race endures. The cars change, the drivers change, but the Indianapolis 500 blazes on, thanks to tradition, pageantry, and speed. 230 miles per hour, 2.5 miles, 4 turns, 33 drivers, 1 winner. Memorial Day weekend, it is the greatest spectacle in racing." The green flag drops on the 108th running of the Indy 500 on Sunday, May 26th at 12:45 p.m.
Let's take a look around the world of motorsports. We'll start with the IndyCar Series. The Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach from Long Beach, California is this weekend, as we mentioned. The schedule is as follows. Saturday practice, which is tomorrow, 11:25 a.m., and qualifying at 2:25 p.m. to follow right after. Sunday's race will hit you at 3 p.m. Eastern through the streets of Long Beach, 85 laps, 167.28 miles. Last year, Kyle Kirkwood won from the pole position, as Caleb alluded to on the podcast, and this is a really interesting stat from IndyCar. Only 6 drivers have won from the pole position on the streets of Long Beach. Al Unser Jr., who's celebrating a birthday today, coincidentally, doing so in 1989 and 1990. The great Mario Andretti doing it in 84, 85, and 87. Elio Castro Neves in 2001. Sebastian Bourdais in 2006 and 07, back-to-back years. Same story for Alexander Rossi, who did it in 18 and 19. And then, of course, Kyle Kirkwood, who did it last year in 2023. Over in NASCAR, the Cup Series heads to Talladega this weekend for the Geico 500. Kyle Busch won there last year. NASCAR's Xfinity Series is also on tap this weekend from Talladega. Formula One is in China for the Chinese Grand Prix from the Shanghai International Track Circuit. There was no race there last year due to the pandemic. F1, in fact, has not run in Shanghai since 2019, with 4 races called off because of the COVID-19 pandemic. As for the last race in F1, Max Verstappen won in Japan last time out. His 3rd win in 4 races this season. He's been completely dominant. That's been the story for the last couple years. The 3-time defending champion has now won 22 of the last 26 races. And since 2021, when he won his first championship, Verstappen has won 47 of 70 races. Now, MotoGP, Global Motorcycles Racing version of Formula One, looks prime for a bid to copy F1's explosive growth in recent years and bring a new group to the, you know, I would say the fans here in the States, because Liberty Media's recent purchase of the Spain-based Dorna and the commercial rights to MotoGP by the end of the year has fueled incredible speculation of what might come for a racing series anchored largely in Europe. And Trackhouse Racing now is moving into the series this season, and its potential crossover appeal to NASCAR, in my opinion, really is exciting, because you're also going to have MotoGP implement a broadcast deal with TNT Sports to carry every sprint race and Grand Prix live across the network's platforms. And this is huge news on both fronts, both the Trackhouse and the TNT Sports news. I think it's interesting to see how motor racing really starting to take a bigger hold here in the U.S., whether it's IndyCar, Formula One, now MotoGP. And this week, actually, the Dionysi store in New York City downtown, all the way downtown, had Marco Bezzecchi from the VR 46 team, Valentino Rossi, got a chance to go down there and speak to him. And obviously he was really excited to speak about the growth of MotoGP and just impressed to be here in New York and to talk about the series. That's pretty much all the time that we've got here on the podcast. If we want to thank Caleb Hatch for coming on with us today, Bobby C signing off here on Beyond the Visor. Enjoy the races this weekend, and remember to keep the hammer down.